The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Bahati Mutisia for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Teen Magazine. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from Teen Vogue and a new online magazine I discovered called The Teen Mag, which is an online magazine for high schoolers that gives young, aspiring journalists the opportunity to share their stories. The first article for today will come from Teen Vogue's OG History Series, which is a series where we unearth history not told through a white, cis-heteropatriarchal lens. This article is titled, How White People Used Tuberculosis to Settle the Southwest. It's by Jordana Rosenfield, and it was published July 28, 2020. The Trump administration used the novel coronavirus pandemic as an excuse to pollute, and governors pushed their states to reopen despite copious evidence that this disease is disproportionately harming Black and Brown communities. But it's important to remember that white leaders exposing people of color to fatal illness for a political gain is nothing new in this country. White political and business leaders used tuberculosis to try to create white dominance in New Mexico. In 1880, tuberculosis, an infectious disease that most often attacks the lungs, causing violent and bloody coughing spells, was one of the leading causes of death in the United States. Also known as consumption, TB, and the White Plague of Europe, because TB causes its sufferers to become extremely pale, tuberculosis had run rampant since antiquity. By the 19th century, it had killed 1 in 7 of all people who had ever lived. No pharmaceutical cure existed at the time, so doctors instead prescribed a climate cure, hoping that dwelling somewhere arid and sunny with lots of fresh air would dry out patients' lungs and help them beat the disease. Political and business leaders in the territory of New Mexico were deep into their push to become a state by 1880, seeking greater representation in the federal government. Although New Mexico had roughly twice the 60,000 residents required to become a state, its leaders struggled to win over lawmakers in Washington, D.C. Historians argue that racist and xenophobic objections to New Mexico's population played a big role in its exclusion from the Union. Quote, the reasons that kept New Mexico from being a state were that they were primarily Hispanic, Roman Catholic, they don't speak English, they're poorly educated. Those four things kept coming up over and over and over, end quote. Historian Rick Hendricks told the Albuquerque Journal in 2013. To counter Easterners' perceptions of New Mexico residents, territorial officials founded the Bureau of Immigration and tasked it with furthering the cause of statehood by making New Mexico's population more, quote, American, meaning whiter, more Protestant, and better educated. The Bureau of Immigration had to find a way to convince white Americans to relocate to New Mexico from elsewhere in the U.S., so they made a shrewd strategic move and began advertising heavily that New Mexico had the best climate for curing tuberculosis, hoping to attract white TB patients from the East Coast, Nancy Owen Lewis, cultural anthropologist and author of Chasing the Cure in New Mexico, Tuberculosis and the Quest for Health, told Teen Vogue. In hundreds of pamphlets and publications with titles like Why Albuquerque, New Mexico Will Make You Well and What Can New Mexico Do for Invalids, the Bureau and its allies made bold claims about the territory's healing powers. New Mexico, the tourist shrine, published in 1882, asserted that the lowest death rate from tubercular disease in America is in New Mexico. Local communities soon began promoting their own healing properties. Santa Fe called itself the Land of Sunshine, and Albuquerque's slogan became Heart of the Well Country, while Silver City, plugged as the city with the golden climate, claimed it had the most salubrious climate of all, Lewis details in her book. Many government pamphlets argued that the New Mexico climate was so healthful that native New Mexicans were naturally immune to tuberculosis. That lie even made it into medical journals and official government reports when it was taken up by doctors, many of whom had themselves come to the territory in search of improved health. Physician Francis Crossan argued that the native people of New Mexico are singularly free from tuberculosis, citing the climate as the cause. The Bureau's marketing campaign worked. Aided by the territory's new railroad access, thousands of tuberculosis patients, often called health seekers or lungers, moved to New Mexico. These health seekers were exactly the kind of people the Bureau of Immigration hoped to attract, often well-educated and wealthy white professionals, including writers, academics, business people, and politicians, many of whom would go on to become significant figures in the state's history. Health seekers settled all across New Mexico in towns, cities, and rural communities. They would often board with local families, rent rooms, or stay in hotels in most cases, living alongside and in close contact with native New Mexicans. An entire industry sprang up to accommodate the health seekers as people opened sanatoriums, long-term medical facilities where TB patients went to rest and recover. Lewis found an official report boasting that from 1880 to 1885, the territory population had increased by 14,576, all presumably of Anglo-Saxon extraction. In 1912, in large part due to the influx of thousands of white Americans, New Mexico became the 47th state to join the Union. At the time, despite doctors' claims of native immunity, TB was becoming a problem in Mexican, Hispanic, and Native American communities. The state struggled throughout its early years to identify and manage the growing number of TB cases among local New Mexicans, as it had no Department of Public Health and wouldn't until 1919. Without a coordinated public health authority, the state had no public hospitals or testing facilities, meaning medical care was reserved for those who could pay for it. The need for a locally accessible TB treatment was also overshadowed by the official position that native New Mexicans were immune to TB, a myth that persisted until 1918. Lewis first became aware of the relevance of tuberculosis to New Mexico's history while writing a book on the institution where she works, the Santa Fe School for Advanced Research, which was founded by the husband of a health seeker and staffed by other health seekers. When she went to the state archives to learn more about the health seeker movement, she found Bureau of Immigration propaganda advertising New Mexico's healing climate and TB immune locals. Then, shortly after, she writes, I find a list from 1918 of more than 100 young men from New Mexico, mostly locals, you know, I could tell by the Hispanic surnames. These 100 and some men were found to have tuberculosis, Lewis told Teen Vogue. And I thought, well, that's interesting. They weren't supposed to have this disease. When more and more young New Mexicans were discharged from military service in 1918 due to tuberculosis infection, the governor, Washington Ellsworth Lindsay, began to take notice. Trying to locate treatment for the soldiers, he repeatedly found sanatoriums full of recently arrived health seekers with no available beds for native New Mexicans. The governor recognized this as a symptom of a structural problem and requested the U.S. Surgeon General order an official statewide health survey, which Lewis credits as the birth of public health in New Mexico. That statewide survey, finding that the Spanish-American element suffers increasingly from tuberculosis, and the Indian is extremely prone to both tuberculosis and trachoma, officially discredited the immunity myth. It was replaced, however, with a different, more familiar narrative of racial inferiority, explaining that people native to New Mexico were more susceptible to disease as members were of an ill-fed, ignorant, shiftless race with gross neglect of all sanitary rules or customs. Although medical science has advanced by leaps and bounds in the last 100 years, the story of tuberculosis in the American Southwest eerily echoes today's pandemic. Leaders continue to value power and profit over black and brown lives. The spread of disease is still intensely political, hitting communities of color the hardest, following the contours of systemic racism. Tuberculosis is left out of many official narratives about New Mexico's journey to statehood. If there's any hope of addressing our country's racist legacy, it's imperative to reckon with all the ways in which the United States was built on harming and disregarding the bodies of black and indigenous people. So that concludes a very interesting article on another piece of history of our country. The next two articles are going to focus on college applications and finding colleges, as I know a lot of our teens out there are thinking about that. So the next article is from the Teen Mag, and it's titled, How to Find Your Dream School Amidst a Pandemic. And this article is by Hollis Humphrey, and it was published on Wednesday, August 5th. The transition from high school to college is a memorable and somewhat challenging time for many, and a time that is currently suffering under pressures not typically associated with moving away from home. In a time full of questions, with no definitive answers, rising high schoolers are left in the dark on what kind of college experience they may even be signing up for. A summer many rising seniors planned on spending attending college tours in hopes of finding a school fit for them has not been the summer 2020 anyone was expecting. With the college application process soon approaching and the campus tours that many incoming students rely on being canceled, the task of finding the perfect college has become significantly more difficult. While school websites are a great place to start, even now, you shouldn't let your school search end there. Here are some top tips for finding your dream school amidst a pandemic. Look into online tours. Many colleges and large universities have taken to online click-through campus tours and informational meetings via Zoom for prospective students. Some schools have made their own version of a virtual information session led by admissions staff with the goals of spreading information about why their school should be your dream school. While an online tour or Zoom info session may not give you the same authentic perspective on a school, it does create a much more accessible experience. Not having to make a trip out to see a school in person can save a lot of time and money, as well as allowing you to check out schools in faraway places you may not have considered otherwise. A majority of these live online meetings will allow time to answer any questions about admissions, changes during the pandemic, student life, academics, and whatever else interests you. And don't forget to take notes. Do a YouTube search. If you're looking into any larger university, chances are there's someone out there who has discussed their experience attending. Doing a quick YouTube search for schools you're interested in can yield hundreds of results, from drone-filmed campus tours to a week in my life videos. Watching videos like these work well alongside virtual information sessions to get an overall understanding of how it would feel to go there. Some colleges have their own YouTube channels, but for the information you learn, can feel much more personal coming from a student. You can also find videos specific to a major, program, or extracurricular you're interested in. Student-made sit-down videos answering questions asked by viewers can be super helpful in finding a school that has a social and academic environment that works well for you. Think about what's important to you in college, both the learning environment and social opportunities, and these videos will help you make those decisions. Student life and culture vary by school, and this is a great way to get a feel for a campus and how you could fit in there. Talk to others. While the current coronavirus constrictions have brought the typical student-led tours to a halt, there are still many ways to contact people who have the answers to all your questions. Talking to your friends about your college plans can provide some ideas of what to look for and what will suit your interests. But don't let your college conversation stop with being with people your age. Take time to pursue conversations with people who have attended or currently attend schools you're looking into. Even if you don't personally know someone, an Instagram DM or a YouTube comment can help you gain an insider look at what could be your dream school. When looking into a school that interests you, pay attention to contacts you may come across. Many schools make it pretty easy to contact an admissions counselor with any questions. Additionally, if you attend a Zoom information session, you can sometimes gain more personal contact with the administrator who ran the call. Occasionally, there are also options for online Q&A sessions with current students facilitated by the college that can provide answers you may be searching for. Know what you need. Knowing your needs and wants when heading into a big life decision is extremely important. When establishing what you want in a school, think about not only academics, but also the sort of social experience you would look for. Academically, is there a specific major, class, or program that you're looking for? Are major sporting events important? Greek life? What does the surrounding city offer? A study abroad program? Any fun school traditions? These are all questions of what matters to you personally and what you can live without. Remember to create attainable goals and plans for yourself regarding college. There's no problem with dreaming big, but when you set realistic goals, they become easier to attain. Conduct some research on admission requirements to schools you're interested in. Are they test optional due to COVID-19? What's their typical SAT and ACT scores? Do they use the Common App? Do you need to assemble a portfolio? Are any parts of the application due soon? Identifying aspects of the college experience that you find as a must-have make it much easier to find your dream school. Knowing what you want in a school and what steps you need to take to get there are great ways to move in the direction of establishing your college list and hopefully finding your perfect fit. Even in a situation with such uncertain outcomes that can be, quite frankly, pretty stressful, it's important that we keep looking towards the future with high hopes. And finally, the article ends with a personal example by the author. For me, it's important that I go to a school with a relatively large student body and that hosts competitive sports games that I could attend. At the moment, I focus my search on schools within my home state due to finances. I've spent my fair share of time exploring options for majors at the universities that interest me. Majors that I'm considering include journalism, creative writing, film studies, production, and media studies. It's important to me that my dream school not only offers these programs, but it's strong in them and presents some kind of unique opportunity that sets it apart from other schools. Recently, I've spent more time having helpful discussions with friends on what colleges interest us and how we plan to write application essays. I've begun to assemble a document on my laptop listing schools I'm interested in, recording all the criteria that matter to me. Listing out application fees, tuition predictions, target test score ranges, and what about that school that interests me, and possible pros and cons. There are services such as the College Board's Big Future that make it easy to compile a list to compare schools. With every school on your list, ask yourself if you can envision yourself being there, and take into consideration why or why not. Other resources. And the article just goes on to list other articles that talk about applying to colleges. Despite the current circumstances, the class of 2021 is experiencing it is in our best interest to work with what we've got and make the best of the situation. Happy dream school hunting. The next article is titled, Why It's Important to Stay True to Yourself When Writing Your College Essay. And this is by Kaylee Buck, and it was published August 7th. For many students, college is right around the corner, and this means writing essays for colleges. While this can be nerve-wracking, it's also a chance to show colleges who you are as a person, as each person is different in their own right. Sometimes it can be hard to find a unique characteristic that would stick out to a college. Here's how you can show each college you apply to who you are and what is unique about you. So much of the college process is about covering everything in gold leaf and making yourself look as perfect as possible. Contrary to what so many incorrectly say, the college essay isn't about pitching yourself as a perfect person. It's about being yourself. Number one, have a personal anecdote about a lesson you've learned. While many students struggle to find a memorable opening to their essay, sometimes all you need is a personal anecdote to start them off, and then the essay practically writes itself. This is especially useful for those who want to take a creative approach to their essay, but don't know how to. Of course, this strategy doesn't apply to every essay prompt, but it definitely works in a pitch. Number two, write your essay as though you're introducing a friend. This is definitely an interesting way of highlighting your unique qualities. We've all had to introduce a contact to a family member or another friend, etc. So describe yourself as though you are introducing a contact to someone who's never met them. This method allows you to get a new perspective on the quality or qualities that you may not necessarily believe are unique about you. Number three, ask your friends and family what they believe are your best qualities. This one may seem rather obvious, but it's useful. Try texting a close friend. Ask them what three words they'd use to describe you and start from there. Sometimes what they say will surprise you, and it might even give you insight into yourself that triggers an essay-worthy idea. Your family and friends can provide different aspects of you that you may not believe is unique, as well as give some new perspectives. This method can also be combined with other methods for an even better essay. Number four, pick a character trait. The first step is to pick an aspect of yourself that you want the essay to highlight. There are countless options to pick from. It might seem like a fun challenge to try to sell yourself on pessimism and impatience, but this is the time to show who you are as a person and what your true character is. You could highlight kindness, sincerity, determination, persistence, or your passion for cooperative thinking. These methods are all well and good, but is there a reason behind extenuating your uniqueness to a college? Absolutely. Thousands of students are applying to colleges across the country. This can make it hard for colleges to differentiate between students. By highlighting personal qualities, such as determination, perseverance, or even creativity, a college is more likely to notice you and even offer scholarships. You have 250 to 650 words. The only requirement is that you have to fit your essay into that space. Other than that, you can do almost anything. You can write a screenplay, a lyric essay, a poem. The possibilities are endless. You can write a monologue or a comedy scene or a recipe. You can be playful, serious, funny, introspective, or all of the above. Although these methods could be used to start the essay or help to show your creative side, they shouldn't take the place of a traditional essay format. No matter how you start your essay, it needs a beginning, middle, and end that tells the reader something about yourself that they aren't getting elsewhere in your application. So have some fun with it and give yourself permission to try things that are out of the ordinary. Because part of standing out in a positive way is doing something that is different from the status quo. And with the last minute or so, the last article talks about four questions that you should ask colleges when you're looking for a college. This is by Soraya Hendry, published August 13th. And I'll just hit the most important parts of the article. One of the questions that she strongly advises you ask is, how were students treated during the COVID-19 crisis? Why you should ask this question? How a university treats students in an emergency says a lot about how much the university prioritizes students' quality of life, generally speaking. If a university kicked all of the students out without warning, refused to accommodate struggling students, and made everyone come back in the fall, then this is a school that might prioritize money over education and student life. Another important part she brings out in this article, what does the school do to support student mental health? Why would you ask this question? I've said it before, she writes. I'll say it again. College isn't easy. You might be far away from home with an all-new group of friends. You might have to balance your schoolwork with a job and extracurriculars. You will have romantic and platonic relationships. You'll take some time to find yourself. College is a lot of work. Because of that, you should find out what mental health issues students commonly struggle with and what campus resources are available to help students maintain mental and emotional wellness. Well, we have run out of time for today's episode of Teen Magazine. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Bahati Mutisia, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Teen Magazine is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.